right, guys, welcome to the show. We got a good one for you here. We got my coach Richardson here in the house, and we're kind of going to explain a little bit about what we got going on, and I'm super excited. So I guess tell a little bit about your vision, Rich, and then we can kind of just go from there on what we're trying to do, maybe what the goal of the show is, and then I think I'd like to parlay that into sort of like how you became a Falcon. That's kind of what we're trying to go the direction, and then maybe I can talk about how I became a Falcon, and yeah, we'll just go from there.
All right. No, my big thing is I experience so many amazing young people, and I watch them go through such a transformational phase in their life. And I always can now see, like, wow, this person in med school, this person did this, this person did that. And I look at where they were when they first got to me. And it's always like, I get to see it. But I think it's something that now, because for some reason, I feel so inclined that our new athletes or the upcoming young student athletes need to see that, like, there are people in your shoes. And if this in any way could help the next Venture or the next Alexis or Angel or Steven or whoever else comes our way, if this in some way can be like, they did it, I see myself in them, I can do it. And I think that's just going to be, play such a huge role in many people's lives. And the hard thing is like, I'm realizing as I get older as a coach is you never really realize the impact you have on people. Like, I say stuff and I'm interacting with people so much. I might say something to me might seem insignificant, but to them, it could be a very pivotal moment in their life and in their journey. So I'll kind of jump right in. Like, for me, becoming a Falcon, I went to Downey High School. From Downey High School, I got recruited more so to do football at Cerritos. And when I started football, I just kind of wasn't in love with it like I thought I maybe should be. And I went to the track coach. He said, decathlon. I said, what's that? And he kind of went through his story. Coach Wells was a former decathlete, is actually in the first NCAA Division I decathlon back in Des Moines, Iowa. And it was kind of interesting that, he kind of saw that in me. And we started training, and he would pull up in his van, drop off some implements, and we would just throw. I would train almost like 8 hours a day. All we did was just train. And it wasn't like it wasn't this very strict regimented thing. It was just like, hey, go do some of that and some of this and some of it. And I would lift till he would leave at, 8 o'clock at night in the weight room and kick me out. There was some nights where I go play handball, on the side of the gym at Cerritos. And I was just addicted to it. And I would just do it and do it and do it. And it really opened up so many doors, taught me so much about myself. Went to Long Beach State, and that's where I finished my undergrad degree and, got a chance to be a two-time NCAA Division I All-American in decathlon. My last decathlon as a collegiate athlete was actually where Coach Wells' last decathlon as a collegiate athlete was. And it was pretty cool. He got fourth, I got third. So I always make sure he remembers that part. But for me, getting into coaching now and being home where I feel is my home, being at Cerritos College, being in a position where I can help so many people is just kind of my dream come true. So, and then now here we are.
I like what you're saying. My question is how old would probably your first athlete be now, like ballpark? Because if I'm 24, right? And you've been coaching, you see what I'm saying? So you obviously have kids who have families now, probably in their 30s, late 20s. How old, what I mean?
Yeah. There are a few of my former athletes that have kids in our track club. So I'm not quite there. I'm not quite recruiting my athletes' kids yet, but it's coming faster than I want it to. I'll tell you that much.
And I think the idea, though, of really kind of getting eyes on this is definitely what you brought to me, like, on our phone call. And I was like, yeah, that would be awesome. Because now I'm in a position where, have my big boy job. I kind of have my thing that I'm trying to hone in and that craft that I'm working. And I can't explain how many skills that I take on a day to day that is just like you're saying, maybe simple things, right? That other people, let's say in the professional setting in my office or even with the shows that I develop, right? Like, I'm so meticulous and particular and trying to control the variables that like we know that we can account for. That way, like when things go south, we can be like, oh, guess what? We know that our foundation is solid. So it must be one of these, could be a weather thing. It could be, you know, it's not our implements. Our implements are good. Maybe it's something that the meat has, right? Or just like, it's just keeping it real and honestly authentic. And I think it's such a like pivotal moment, like you're saying, to where when I look back at when I started at Cerritos, it's like not even the same young man that walked through the door is who I am today, right? But it's just like I see things different. Like I'm a lot more gentler, right? I'm a lot more patient. Hey, buddy, go away. We got the dog here. He's going to go to a shelter. If you need like a good junkyard dog, I definitely got him for you. But let me know on that. Keep me posted. But yeah, just like honestly, the connections I made too, like everybody that I trained with, I think I still have some sort of tabs that I keep and like to see kind of where they ended up, some good, some bad, right? And it's like not all the apples in the crate ended up being good apples, but like the ones that were, it's really cool to kind of just call, check up on them and be like, oh, that's great. You're in the Navy, or like you just graduated, or you just did that, or you're having a baby. And like, it's just really fun stuff, right?
Yeah, that's the journey.
And you talk about like the impact on people too. That's what you said that really pushed me is I think kind of my journey was, I remember I wanted to play football, right? That was kind of coming out of high school. I was like, oh, I'd love to be a football player. That's what I wanted to do since I was a kid. I didn't like the politics in football. There was a lot of kind of like, you know, issues where I moved around every year, right? So I'd have to get a new coach, find these new teammates, build chemistry. And then by the start of week one, they're always like, we're not going to put you in the starting rotation, Venture. You know, we're going to ease you in, right? And then I remember, I think it was an Olympic year. It was Ashton Eaton, maybe in one of his last go-arounds, running around like the Oregon track or something that qualifies. And I was like, I think I could do that. Like, there's a handsome light-skinned guy, like, doing his thing. Why don't I just go try that, right? And then I think my mom looked into it and was like, oh, there's this guy at Cerritos. You know, his name's Christopher Richardson. Let's go check him out. And I was like, all right, cool. Let's go do it. And then, obviously, I met you, and I was like, oh, this guy's amazing. Like, this is somebody who I actually can relate to. He's not some, like, old white guy that's super out of touch that, you know what I mean, is going to tell me like rub some dirt on it. He really seems like what he's saying he's done himself. And yeah, like obviously if you said jump or go do something, like I prided myself on at least being somewhat coachable and listened, and like that's kind of how things rolled from there. So I think the next thing that we can try to figure out is maybe who's going to be on the show. Who do we envision sort of as good prospects for Falcon Talks?
I think it started, well, it's the idea started right after kind of COVID was winding down. I reached out to one of our illustrious alumni, Whitney Ashley, who is a former Olympian and Division I national champion in the discus. And we just kind of had a little round robin Zoom talk and recorded it. And then from there, that really kind of sparked, like, hey, I want to get in touch, back in touch with this person or that person. So I reached out to a couple people here and there, kind of like a blast from the past. And our schedules linked up where I was able to get on a Zoom with them. Some our schedules haven't linked up quite as much. And then I think a couple years ago, it might have been a year or two ago, but where you started your podcast, or at least where by the time I got on your podcast and been watching it and kind of following or kind of listening, following along and seeing how dynamic and kind of captivating you've become in this kind of space. And obviously you have the gift of gab, so you'd be able to be a better interviewer than me. So I'm like, we need to get more contemporary athletes. And yeah, I do want to continue that thing where because it's a good excuse for me to get, you know, reconnected with former athletes. Mm-hmm. It's just a good excuse, I would say. Yeah. But especially with the more contemporary athletes, I really think that you would do a great job of just kind of touching base with them, being able to connect with them, and kind of being able to draw out their story and kind of where their path has come and where it's headed. And I think, again, like that can mean a lot for them. And it could also, you know, play a huge role in, you know, future athletes to come. But, you know, the couple of names I have top of my head, I have like Elena Mack, you know, who was somebody that wasn't going to run track out of high school and was the top 400 meter runner in the state this year and got a Division I scholarship. But if you asked her out of high school, she wasn't going to run anymore. So she just started working jobs and, you know, kind of keeping it chill. Had a young man move from Florida who was mostly a football player, didn't really want to do track, but, you know, just because the seasons didn't line up, he didn't play football first. He ran track first and then fell in love with track. And now his story is being written and, you know, some of the adversity that he had to go through. You know, one of the another most notable ones that we're looking forward to is Juan Ward. Juan Ward is somebody that, you know, came to us from a university, from Southern, you know, Long Beach Poly kid, then didn't work out in Southern, came to Cerritos, got the school record, got caught up in the wrong place at the wrong time, and was spent almost, I don't want to get this incorrect, but spent some time behind bars and, you know, kind of reinvigorated himself, got, you know, almost earned his degree out of, got his AA degree for sure, like a few units off his bachelor's degree while he was in locked up. And as soon as he got out, he got his record expunged because of certain, you know, circumstances, decided to run for us fairly late. You know, obviously coming in the, you know, when spring starts is still is considered late and ends up being the second fastest hurdler in the state this year. And is now, you know, trying to figure out where he's going to finish his career. So we have quite a few, just like a mate, like, Caleb is probably last one. I'll reference this off the top of my head, but Caleb is an amazing young man that came in and we saw so much potential in him, and his biggest growth wasn't so much on the track, but just as a person. I watched him, like, I mean, when I say blossom, it's an understatement. He had a full bloom, became a leader within our, student government. Was a huge advocate for our student athletes, the whole entire student athlete body, in terms of being able to open up competition to go out of state. Was somebody that was a huge team captain and leader, and just somebody that just mentored other student athletes. And just recently got accepted to UCLA, which is and Berkeley, which are his, you know, top [S2] Nice. [S1] Schools of his choice. So he's obviously, we call him, his nickname on our team, you know, Jones always gives everybody nicknames, is Mr. President, just because. He, you know, is almost infallible. You know, he takes true leadership, takes true accountability. Doesn't mean he's without fault, but everything he does is just above reproach. So somebody that we're definitely proud to, and we know is going to be achieving some pretty special things in the near future. You know, but
I like that.
I think that's the top of my head. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the kind of next things I wanted to transition to was just talking about the importance of authenticity. Like, I'm not the most talented guy. I'm not the guy that's going to create the best show. But what I will say is I'm not going to put out anything that I don't believe in and that I don't like stand by, obviously. So, and I think that's why my listeners or, you know, the people that support everything that I make, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a video, I don't know, whether it's telling somebody how to train a dog or something, right? Like, I do this, you know what I mean? Like, there's a reason why I do this. I probably fucked it up one or two times, right? So it's like, hey, you learn from it, you keep it going, right? And I think just the importance of authenticity within this show is what we're trying to do. Within your program is what we're trying to do. And I just kind of want to hear you touch upon the importance of being true to yourself and, you know, the guy or girl next to you as well.
Yeah, and I think that's like the hardest thing, because it's easy to kind of move, shake, and manipulate your own values for your situation and your circumstance. And it's really hard because, like, as a coach, you know, sometimes we're put in positions where it's like, just let it go because they're performing, or let it go because I don't want to make them mad, because what if they quit and they're not part of our team? But I know that I have to look myself in the mirror every day, and I have to know that I did what I feel is the absolute best for that person. And sometimes that's having hard conversations. Sometimes that's telling them the dead honest truth. That's in those things aren't easy. Yeah, they're not easy as a coach. They're not easy to hear. They're not easy conversations, because I have to feel and I have to stand on everything that I share with a student athlete, especially if it's advice, because one of my biggest fears, right, is the thing that looms over me the most is misguiding a student athlete. And so I take it so serious that if I'm going to give them advice, it is, and sometimes they get mad at me because they might ask me for advice and they want me to just to snap back. I'm like, ah, yeah, think about this one. And so, cause I want to go through everything that I know, but they want an immediate, you know, cause sometimes I've already been thinking about this question before they even answered it. They asked it to me or something like that. So sometimes I'm ready with the answer. I'm like, oh, I've been waiting for this. But when you talk about, especially these individuals or the individuals that we're going to be talking about, is that we've had hard conversations. And sometimes I tell athletes, cause I know, I see them right off the top, is I go, you're probably going to laugh harder than you've ever laughed training with me, or more than likely, you're going to cry. There's going to be a moment where you're going to be brought to tears, or like there's something going to happen. Like that's going to be evoked, just not out of anger. Or, you know, it might come in a lot of different ways, but at the end of the day, you're going to be tested. Who you are is going to be tested. And I feel like that's how we become the best versions of ourselves. That's how we really stretch beyond our boundaries and achieve things that we never thought we could achieve, kind of situation. But it all starts with being real and having real conversations and making sure that we try to get the most out of it.
And I think I have two more things, and I always say that, but I really do have two more things, and then we'll close this one out. But you're in a very unique position to where you've gotten to see kind of the most important age gap of like 18 to, you know, 21, that range, right, of young adults for the past, I would say, 15 years or plus of your career, right? How have kids changed or young adults changed over the past 15 to 20 years of your career, would you say? Because I just remember, you can take my situation of, my parents did a good job with me, right? I felt like I was a very kind of mature young man when I was coming into Cerritos, let's say housing, right? I remember getting that apartment, cramming everybody in there, and then just like seeing the little things of like, you know, you got to flush the toilet when you're done, bud, right? Or like, hey, you know, like there's always some dad, you know, we crack 5-6 guys in an apartment or whatever. And there's always a dad, right? I was the dad of like, hey, man, we got to get toilet paper. Who's buying, you know? Or like, hey, we got to wash the dishes. Just simple things of like, you didn't do this growing up, you know, like you didn't wash your clothes. You don't fold your clothes, just things like that. So just the way you carry yourself of like, hey, you stink, man. You got to shower, you know, whatever it is. I'm like, hey, guess what? You stunk when you showered. So we have to scrub the tub or else there's going to be a ring around it of just filth, right? So it's like just things. How has the athlete changed? How have young adults changed since you've seen them? Good or bad?
I'm going to say from a standpoint of, and I talked to my team actually this year about it, is just maturity and insecurity. It's such a weird thing. And it's not so much immaturity, like knock, knock jokes or something like that. It's being able to trust themselves in there are individuals that are maybe more or have a higher capacity of maturity at that point in time. But the overarching group is just the rate of maturity is so much lower. Like usually we would have a team mom, a team dad, somebody that's just on it and could take accountability. And then the insecurity part, there was just so much doubt. There was just so much like they wanted to hedge their bets. They weren't willing to bet on themselves. They second guessed even their best situations. And I'm watching that insecurity and I don't know if those things are mutually exclusive, like, or which one came first? Is it because they're insecure because they're immature, or they're immature because they're insecure? And I don't know which one comes first necessarily, but what I will say is that if I have to be more patient with when and how I push, because their level of adaptation to change is a little bit slower because they're hedging their bets. And they're more willing to give up on themselves and things like that. And I will say, like, in terms of being able to or willingness to step into an alpha role is so much more reluctant than I've ever seen. And now more than ever, I'm having to thrust who I feel has some of those attributes into those roles when usually they would assimilate into a more alpha role, whether it's in a training group or just the team environment as a whole. But on the women and men's side, I've just seen those are maybe the biggest differences between athletes 10 years ago and now that I'm, mm-hmm. that at least that I'm experiencing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just good to put that out there because, you know, somebody else is feeling that way. I think that's honestly one of the big reasons why I even started a podcast was like, I'm partially trying to create the show that I needed 5 years ago, 10 years ago, let's say, right? To let people know, like, hey, I fuck up too, right? Like, hey, I messed this up, so it's okay. Like, it's hard for me to wake up in the morning too and understand that, like, I only, let's say today I'm in Vegas. It's gonna be 110 degrees out by like 9:30. So I need to wake up or else I'm gonna die, right? It's like time is ticking. Seconds are going by where it's just the sauna is just going up and up and up. And you're not gonna lay in the bed and be like, it's going to hurt if I wait another hour. Let's just go get that workout in now. Let's take the dog out now. Let's whatever, send those emails now. And just that's the connection point, right? It's like people are the most important thing. And that's just kind of what we're going to try to do with this show is understand that, hey, we'll have people who have been through the ringer, right? We'll have people who are currently in the ringer, and hopefully it can help people who are thinking about, even if it's not necessarily being a falcon, whatever their version of a falcon is, right? Pushing through and just learning to love it, right? Last thing I wanted to touch on was your coaching style. I think the thing that sets you apart within like my kind of Mount Rushmore, you know, I think every young adult should have at least maybe three, four, or five people that they're kind of trying to mash together that have different qualities where you go like, hey, I call this guy for this, right? I definitely don't call this guy for this. I call this guy for this, right? And you're somebody who was one of my only coaches in my entire childhood that didn't like yell. You know what I mean? You're not a yeller where it's like, all right, go run 7 laps and this and that and that. And I just remember like there'd be times where I'd be like, he's not going to yell or what's going on? And you're always very kind of nudge and touch and very kind of, I don't know, it's just common sense. Like the way you coach is the way that I hear it. And I just remember being in football or when wrestling and I'm just like, this is a lot of racket for no reason at all. Like, I don't know why we're doing all this. This is why I didn't know I was in theater class right now. Like, I'm just trying to play my sport and get out. Like, this whole mindset thing, like, you either have it or you don't. I don't know what to tell you. Like, if we can't find 11 guys to go bust ass, sorry, we don't got it, coach. Like, but you know, you take a guy on a track and you're like, it's all you, buddy. Like, you know, as a coach, you're like, I'm going to give you a lane. So you can't come back to me. I think Alan said that one time that was like, hey, you can't blame me for, you know, you're going to be in a lane. You're getting a lane. What you do with that opportunity is up to you, but don't come back to me crying and hooting and hollering that like I would had some conspiracy against you because the clock don't lie, right? So I think just your, what would
You
you
know,
call it? You know what I'm talking about. You're kind of like
it's really
sensitive. I
strange
don't
because
have a word
I
for it,
actually
but you
I
know what I
have a
mean? Like the
few
way that you
kind of
do
touch
it.
and go thoughts on that and my evolution of that as well, just because I'm not a cheerleader.